So I was going to ask you actually about the Archer 1050 study because you did the editorial there in the JCO about it. Can you talk a little bit about what dacomitinib is and sort of like how it compares biochemically or clinically with the other agents? And it's kind of interesting that this came out, and yet it kind of seems like it sort of got pushed away because osimertinib was so impressive in the FLAURA trial. But what do we know about dacomitinib?
Yeah, I think that speaks to, till now I've talked about these generations of EGFR inhibitors, right? And I do think it makes sense to delineate them a bit better. First generation inhibitors, these are agents like gefitinib and erlotinib. So these are reversible inhibitors on the level of the kinase. And it's a helpful graphic. So think about not only reversibility, but do they, so as a class, let me take a step back even more. What distinguishes first through third generation inhibitors, there are several factors. One, reversible versus irreversible inhibitors. Two, do they hit other members of the HER family, namely things like HER2? And three, are they mutant selective? And by that I mean, are they T790M selective? And lastly, four, what is the therapeutic index relative to wild type EGFR? So those are the four things that distinguish the various generations of EGFR inhibitors. So first generation inhibitors, reversible, don't hit HER2, not, T790M's a vulnerability. We know that that resistance mutation is the gatekeeper. And there's some therapeutic window between wild type and mutant EGFR. And by that, I mean things like deletion 19, L858R, but they do still hit wild type. In terms of the second generation inhibitors, which some have called the lost generation of EGFR inhibitors, these are agents like afatinib and dacomitinib. So these are irreversible inhibitors. They also hit parts of the other HER family members. But the challenge of these drugs is that they have a very narrow therapeutic window, and they're limited in dosing based on how they hit wild type EGFR. So in the petri dish, you can hit T790M with these drugs, but you're never able to achieve those levels therapeutically because you're limited by effects on wild type EGFR.
What about dacomitinib in terms of the traditional effects? Is it similar to afatinib, but they're significant?
Yeah, so I'll be honest, I haven't used it yet, and we didn't participate in the Archer studies. But if we look at the toxicity profiles from that study, over 60% of patients required dose reductions of dacomitinib. And so this does look like this is a challenging drug. I would say the same for afatinib, that tolerability has always been an issue with these agents.
What about indirect comparisons, which, of course, you have a lot of potential difficulties, but if you just focus on the benefit that was seen with dacomitinib compared to osimertinib, any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think when you make those cross-trial comparisons, one key eligibility point that you need to make is that the Archer 1050 study did not allow patients with brain metastases, whereas the FLAURA study did. And so that's a crucial distinction when we're comparing these. Certainly if you're enrolling patients with brain metastases and they didn't need to be treated, as long as they were stable on FLAURA, those patients were eligible. And so one would presume that those patients aren't going to do as well with standard therapy. And so that's why I think people have really latched on to the FLAURA data because, it was an impressive PFS improvement where almost 19 months versus about 10 months in the FLAURA study. That's an impressive improvement, especially when you take into account that these were patients, many of whom had brain metastases. By contrast, in the Archer study, yes, there was an improvement in overall survival, but in my mind, the degree of an improvement in terms of progression-free survival compared to first-generation inhibitors wasn't as good, acknowledging again cross-trial comparisons.
What about the patient who progresses on osimertinib? Is there any value or role in looking for resistance mutations or mutations of any type? I assume the T790 concept is sort of out the window once you start with osimertinib, but what about on relapse?
Yeah, I think that's a great question and one that we don't fully understand right now. Our initial insights into osimertinib resistance were really in patients who had gone through the sequential treatment paradigm, who were T790M positive and then were receiving osimertinib. What do we know about those patients? We're starting to get looks at various cohorts. We know that osimertinib has a vulnerability in and of itself with development of additional EGFR resistance mutations. And there it's the C797S mutation. Biologically, this makes a lot of sense because osimertinib forms a covalent bond specifically at C797. So it makes sense from a biological standpoint that that may be a residue that is mutated to confer resistance. And so typically in patients who develop that mutation, if they had a prior T790 mutation, you can see these compound mutations where patients have the original EGFR mutation, T790M, and the C797S mutation. And these typically occur in cis, so they're on the same allele. And unfortunately, that compound mutation is very refractory to currently available TKIs.